The U.S. hope is that countries will feel more emboldened to exercise their rights.
The South China Sea highlights tensions between the United States and China. It's Monday, August 3rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, the U.S. Congress debates COVID strategies, securing U.S. elections, a virus-strangled economy, and remembering VOA's jazz ambassador. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Among growing tensions between the United States and China is the South China Sea. China claims much of the busy maritime waters rich in minerals and food above the so-called Nine Dash Line on the map. But nearly a dozen other nations also have overlapping claims off their shores. China has increasingly been patrolling and taking actions in the South China Sea, while the United States, which has no claim, is committed to keeping international waters open for free movement. As both nations' navies have increased activity there, VOA's Adriana Zhang spoke with Bonnie Glazer, Senior Advisor for Asia and the Director of the China Power Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, for the latest in the South China Sea.
The United States has said in the past that China's nine-dash line was illegal, but it did not legally interpret the ruling very narrowly, specifically concerning the legality or illegality of China's coercive activities inside exclusive economic zones of other countries that extend from their coastline. So this pertains to the rights of countries to fish, to exploit oil and gas inside their waters. And the United States has really not had the legal basis to stand up for those rights. And so it is now aligning its policy more closely with that 2016 ruling.
Is it more a symbolic thing, or actually it means that the U.S. is going to take any concrete action, like military action, towards China?
Well, I think it certainly means that we will see tougher statements against China and in support of the rightful actions by countries like Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines, to access their resources that are in their waters. There could be the deployment of military ships involved against China. We actually saw this previewed in May when there were some Chinese law enforcement vessels, a survey ship, and maritime militia vessels that were operating around an oil rig called the West Capella in Malaysia's waters. And the United States actually did dispatch a Navy vessel to the region, probably not very close to the activity that China was engaged in. But I do think that this suggests that there is more willingness on the part of the United States to use both rhetoric and military vessels in order to push back against Chinese coercion and intimidation in the region.
What does that mean to the countries in that region?
Well, I think the U.S. hope is that countries will feel more emboldened to exercise their rights, that they will not be intimidated by China. They will not shut down oil and gas operations, for example, or they will not feel that they have to accommodate to Chinese interests. They will know that they have some greater support from the United States. We do not know exactly what that will mean in all possible circumstances, but the United States is signaling that it doesn't only care about freedom of navigation by military vessels in the South China Sea. It cares about the larger freedoms that all nations have and are protected under the Convention on the Law of the Seas. And this is particularly important when it comes to fish and when it comes to oil and gas.
Bonnie Glazer, Senior Advisor for Asia at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, speaking with VOA's Adriana Zhang. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. U.S. condemns Hong Kong election postponement. U.S. activist accused of breaching Hong Kong security law says he will not back down. Cambodian union leader arrested for incitement. U.S. outraged at Pakistan killing of citizen on trial for blasphemy. Could Mumbai slums be headed to herd immunity? You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. As VOA Asia continues, the United States has passed the marker of 150,000 deaths from COVID-19, as some spots around the country continue to see rising case numbers. The political, economic, and public health crises are a source of ongoing concern for lawmakers. But the nation's top health experts did have some encouraging news late last week, telling a congressional panel that development of a vaccine for the virus is proceeding rapidly. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson tells us more.
For the first time since June, new cases of COVID-19 fell nationwide compared to the previous week. But with the number of cases still rising in some states, U.S. lawmakers Friday sought answers from the experts leading the Trump administration response.
Can you help us understand why? While Europe has largely contained the virus, the United States is seeing a continued rise in new cases.
If you look at what happened in Europe when they shut down or locked down or went to shelter in place, however you want to describe it, they really did it to the tune of about 95%+ of the country did that. When you actually look at what we did, even though we shut down, even though it created a great deal of difficulty, we really functionally shut down only about 50%.
The United States has ramped up testing in the last few weeks, but with the debate over reopening the American economy still a politically sensitive issue, experts warn testing is no substitute for preventative measures.
We cannot test our way out of this or any other pandemic. Testing does not replace personal responsibility. It does not substitute for avoiding crowded indoor spaces or washing hands or wearing a mask.
Precautions that many hope will bridge the gap until early next year, when officials estimate a vaccine could be ready.
Ultimately, within a reasonable period of time, the plans now allow for any American who needs a vaccine to get it within the year 2020.
Right, and that is the plan.
The White House said Friday that speed is due to the president's leadership.
These critical investments in a coronavirus vaccine are due to the fact that we have a businessman in the White House.
But congressional Democrats accuse the president and Republicans of failing to deliver needed aid to Americans who are out of work and struggling.
The Republicans said they wanted to take a pause. Well, the virus didn't.
Leaders from both parties failed to strike a deal this week that would have extended additional aid to millions of unemployed Americans. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, the death toll from a toxic bootleg alcohol scandal in the North Indian state of Punjab has risen to 98, according to officials and reports. Police have arrested 25 people so far over the worsening tragedy, which emerged late last week. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday suggested voting by mail could make the November 3rd presidential election results fraudulent, asking on social media whether the vote should be delayed. Trump's tweet sparked a debate on election security on Capitol Hill, where Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is testifying. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more from Washington.
For the first time, U.S. President Donald Trump is suggesting delaying this year's presidential election, grabbing the world's attention with a tweet. In it, he alleges, without evidence, that mail-in balloting may make this the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. Trump asks, delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote? The president does not have the power to delay the election, which is to be held November 3rd. The date is set by Congress under the U.S. Constitution.
Committee will come to order. Good morning, everyone.
The tweet came as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was testifying at a Senate hearing on proposed cuts to the State Department budget. Several Democratic senators said they were stunned by the president's tweet and asked Pompeo if a president can delay a presidential election.
You are one of the most highly trained and accomplished lawyers who are part of this administration. Can a president delay a presidential election?
Senator, the Department of Justice, others will make that legal determination. We all should want, I know you do too, Senator Kaine, want to make sure we have an election that everyone is confident in. It's not only for
you.
Free,
are you indifferent to the data?
Democratic Senator Tom Udall said he is hearing concerns about whether the U.S. will continue to set a good example for democracy around the world, with President Trump declining to say whether he will accept the results of the November election. He posed this question to Pompeo.
So, Secretary Pompeo, if President Trump refuses to accept the upcoming November election due to his lack of faith in voting by mail, will you respect the results of a certified election as the State Department typically does throughout the world?
Senator, I'm not going to speculate. You had about 15 ifs in there. You should know. I have said repeatedly to this committee, I will follow the rule of law, follow the Constitution. I've endeavored to do that in everything I've done, and I'll continue to do that every day.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, a Republican, said the U.S. election should definitely be held on November 3rd as planned.
I understand the president's concern about mail-in voting, which is different than absentee voting. But never in the history of the federal elections have we ever not held an election, and we should go forward with our election.
Regarding voting by mail, both the National Association of State Election Directors and the National Association of Secretaries of State told VOA Thursday they are unaware of any developments that could have an impact on the security of this year's election. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. The United States has condemned the Hong Kong government's decision to postpone for 1 year the Legislative Council elections initially scheduled for September 6th. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said there is no valid reason for such a lengthy delay. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the U.S. gross domestic product contracted 9.5% in the second quarter. That's the worst drop ever recorded, according to data published by the Department of Commerce. The massive fall in economic output comes as the country experiences a surge in coronavirus cases that has forced many states to tap their brakes on reopening plans in an effort to again slow the spread of the disease. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
The gross domestic product contracted in the April-June quarter as the coronavirus outbreak forced struggling businesses to close for a second time in many parts of the country. The GDP is the key measure of goods and services produced.
We did see economic output fall by 9.5% in simple terms. That's 32.9% in annualized terms in the second quarter, and that added to about a 10.5% contraction in the first half of the year.
Some interpreted the nearly 33 annualized rate as the U.S. economy shrinking by a third. But Gregory Dacko, the chief U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, says that's not the case.
The problem is that when you're in a recession, you get these steep drops in activity, and then you multiply them by four. But the assumption that you're going to carry these losses again and again over quarter and quarter does not really make much sense. So it's much more useful to talk about simple rate changes in the context of the global coronavirus recession and understand that the U.S. economy as of the second quarter was about 10% smaller than it was pre-COVID.
Earlier this week, Jerome Powell, chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve, warned that early signs of a bounce back are now at risk as some parts of the U.S. experience a surge in coronavirus cases.
We have seen some signs in recent weeks that the increase in virus cases and the renewed measures to control it are starting to weigh on economic activity.
So far, more than 150,000 Americans have died and nearly 4.5 million more have been infected with the coronavirus.
The path forward for the economy is extraordinarily uncertain and will depend in large part on our success in keeping the virus in check.
Dacko echoed the concern.
There are risks that with a renewed spread of the virus and with the lack of passage of urgent fiscal aid, people might start pulling back on spending once again, and that could lead to a double dip type of recession.
He says that's not the case right now, but the situation needs to be monitored very carefully. Other experts say that recovery is going to be slow.
And I think the recovery is going to take time. However, against that backdrop, year-over-year growth rates in GDP could be back to zero by the second quarter of next year. That doesn't mean the economy's back to the level it was prior to the shutdown, but it does mean that the bulk of the deterioration will be behind us within a one-year period of time.
Economists point to the aid relief bill passed in March as a major reason why the economy has started to stabilize after the record drop in the spring. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, the U.S. Congress is trying to agree on funding to prevent those who've lost jobs because of COVID-19 from also losing their homes. Government aid has helped many renters in the state of Virginia, but some there face eviction as both state and federal moratoriums expired. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story of one family at the brink of homelessness in Alexandria, Virginia.
Originally from Sudan, U.S. citizen Sami Burma used to earn $6,000 a month working three jobs back to back. Now, he has no job because of COVID-19.
I'm behind for my rent for 4 months. You know, all what we have right now is the unemployment money. Trying is like to have some, a little bit in the side for any emergency with the kids.
I'm afraid to lose my house. The rent is very high. We have a new baby on the way and the children to maintain.
Although Sami has been helped by a weekly unemployment check for $758, it's not enough to pay the rent at his apartment complex. Southern Towers did not qualify under the now-expired national eviction moratorium.
The protections that prevent evictions and late fees and other fees associated with late payment are not covered under the CARES Act.
Bail Partners, the company that manages the property, says it's helping renters by waiving late fees and extending due dates. Still, after the Virginia moratorium expired in June, it filed a claim to evict Sam's family. In court, he showed proof he had been laid off. That bought him some time.
There is a protection that was put in place recently in Virginia. So if you have fallen behind and lost income due to COVID, so you were up to date on your rent before COVID hit, you can ask the court or request the court for a 60 extra day.
Under pressure, local authorities are rushing to help households like Sammy's.
It is much less expensive
and less tragic for a family to remain in their home and not be evicted than it is for us to relocate them.
Cancel rent!
The national eviction threat is dire. An estimated 28 million renters and 16 million homeowners are at risk, says the real estate investment firm Amherst Capital. In Virginia, more than 1 million households face housing insecurity, says Democratic Senator Mark Warner, noting that renters are more likely to work in hard-hit industries like retail shops and hospitality. Help for renters in Sammy's building, where many tenants are African immigrants, comes from African Communities Together, among other groups.
People should not be paying rent when they're not working. We want some kind of housing justice where, you know, rent has to be, commensurate with people's income.
Besides his unpaid rent, Sammy has piled up credit card debt. Driving his Uber could help, but he fears bringing the coronavirus into his one-bedroom apartment. As he looks for a job, he tries to keep despair at bay.
I'm hoping my job will come back sooner, but if it's not, that is one of the terrifying things that's going through my head every day and every night, because I don't know where to go.
Veronica Valeras Iglesias for VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
The Voice of America has been broadcasting for almost 80 years to millions of people worldwide. And much of the legacy of that success is owed to Willis Conover, who helped popularize jazz throughout Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. For 41 years, he hosted the Jazz Hour on The Voice of America, introducing a worldwide audience to a most unique form of American music.
Dark days behind the Iron Curtain after the Soviet Union extended its grip as far as East Germany. From Washington, the sounds of another world over the radio.
This is the Voice of America Jazz Hour.
Thelonious Monk and Dizzy Gillespie were among the many jazz greats who appeared on Conover's program, drawing millions of listeners over 41 years.
They came to VOA for the jazz and they stayed for the news.
News they couldn't get in their own countries.
The music of jazz parallels the freedom that we have in America, something that not every country has.
Jazz as an art form was not just a wonderful thing to listen to, but it was something people could learn from without necessarily realizing they were learning from it.
Conover provided encouragement to Eastern Bloc jazz lovers, and in 1956, during the Hungarian uprising against Soviet domination.
The 1956 program featuring the Hungarian musicians who had secretly sent a tape to Willis Conover.
Here for the world is their living testimonial in the universal language of music.
Conover accompanied State Department jazz tours through Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and Africa.
Van Willis Conover.
A VOA technician who later worked with Conover on his shows spent many hours listening to his stories.
He was so deep into the jazz world, the musicians knew him, they trusted him, which was very important because when he started working at VOA, some musicians would say that he sold out when he did not at all sell out. In fact, what he did was he opened up the rest of the world, mainly the Eastern Bloc countries, to this music.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Conover died in 1996, but left a legacy. He introduced the world to the creative energies of jazz and to the country that gave birth to the music. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
We're happy to have shared the start of the day with you on VOA Asia, and we invite you back for another program tomorrow. And we'd like to thank those who help bring VOA Asia to you, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.